Oh, good morning, everybody. We're coming to you live right here from inside the main build facility at Bubba's Exotic Motorsports. Monday morning, I'm Tom. Ladies man's laying on the floor right there. You're going to see him before it's all over. And here comes the master, Bub. Morning, Bub. How are we doing today?
I just walked up and I saw the way the lighting is set up and I saw the side of this car. I've never seen so many streaks from whatever kind of detail that was used on this car. Ever.
Wasn't us, Bub.
There are streaks everywhere.
This car is part of one of our famous clients' collections, Bub. We featured this car before. It's going to need a paint job. It's time for a paint job on this car.
Oh, big time, yeah.
Yeah, it's really.
And it's been painted once. You can see it's definitely been painted once. This thing looks like it was a different color at some point. Maybe that's a maroon you're seeing there.
Almost a maroon up in that fender.
Kind of strange, right? But this is typical of that fiberglass. The paint is starting to crack all around this car. Even though this is a true numbers-matching 67 Corvette, has every option possible. It is a 327, but it's an automatic. The only thing that didn't stay the same in this car in terms of numbers matching, but that transmission still does exist, is the fact that it was converted to a four-speed automatic. So it does have much more of a highway cruising setup on it, a nice street cruise, and that's the way that the system was designed. So it is a true numbers matching. What you are seeing is correct, with the exception of that transmission upgrade, but that is still sitting on the side just in case this client ever wanted to go back and sell this thing as a numbers car.
He's very good about that stuff, too. This episode is brought to you by Bubba's Exotic Motorsports. That's bubbasexoticmotorsports.com. Ladies and gentlemen, visit us online for over 20,000 new parts. I was meeting with new detail company this morning, Bub, who also produces race-proven NASCAR-style lubricants and products. We're going to be bringing those to you as well. It's going to be pretty exciting, pretty interesting stuff.
Bub. Yeah.
Miss Outlaw Boutique, MS Outlaw Boutique. Find her online. It's all converted to online now. It's very, very cool what the people are doing over there, Bub. Robin, Layla have got it done. And Podcast One, Bub. The new show is on Podcast One, and we're killing it on the radios over there with Shaquille O'Neal, Magic Johnson, Susie Orman, Dr. Drew, all the big names are over there, Adam Carolla, and I think we've got the guys Todd and Paul from Everyday Driver, the Velocity Show, on with us this Saturday, Bub.
Yeah, man, it's funny because I was actually watching a lot of stuff last night from a lot of those, really kind of like informative, like YouTube videos, very much similar to what we do, but I was watching a lot of the stuff, not from Todd and those guys over there from Everyday Driver, but I was looking at the guys at Top Gear, right? So
yes.
Top Gear Video, they do all of these things. The host of the show, Chris Harris, he does some really, really cool things. And I was learning a lot about the fact that, he goes out and he puts his personal opinion, also his professional as well, in terms of these high-end rides. I was looking at comparisons of the new Porsches. One of the things that he had discussed was that the Porsche 911R, right, which you've seen it, it's identical to my Porsche, but it's just the white with the green racing stripes on it. Comes with a very large motor, very well-balanced setup. But, again, he was one of the things that he had mentioned was he had just driven a Aston Martin right before it, a V12, and he had mentioned that that car had put out so much power and so much torque that he feels Aston needs to go back to the drawing board because you couldn't
balance
properly run that car. You couldn't push it to its full potential because it would just be it would be all over the road. You couldn't control the power that it produced. Especially coming from those high RPM revving V12s. But one of the things that he had mentioned was the 911R that Porsche just created and designed was probably over the past 5 years one of the strongest cars that he'd ever seen any sort of marketing and push, like essentially pushing that car to be the biggest, baddest thing on the street. And he was like, honestly, I feel like it was the biggest waste of time. He was like, because I feel that the Porsches, the GT3s, the GT2 RS, the new one that just came out, the Turbo Carrera, I mean, all of these things, he said it just didn't have that much more of an improvement. Now, granted, it's still like their kind of street/track car, but he said for the push that they gave this car, it just didn't
live up to its expectations.
At all. He said, I still feel like I'm driving just a Porsche 991. It's a very well-balanced car. It's very strong, but I feel like it's more styling and talk than it is improvements.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
But strange, but I love
watching
it.
There you go from the master himself.
I loved watching it because he gives that personal touch on, some cars that you may never get to drive or experience in your life, and he pushes them to that fullest potential.
Much like we do. And that's one of the things that the new show on Podcast One is going to be doing. We're going to be doing a lot of technical stuff, a lot of personal and professional overviews of things, and some analysis.
It essentially made me reconsider my purchase of the new 911R.
Oh, yeah? So how did that go?
Terrible. I definitely was just like, okay, next.
Right on, man.
Yeah.
Right Right on.
Because if there's no improvement from what I've already got to the next level, then why dump an extra 100 grand?
Yeah, you don't need
that's,
to.
That's foolish. Yeah, foolish. And that's kind of what he was getting at was one of the things that he had also driven was a, let's see here, what did he drive? The Dodge Viper. He drove the Dodge Viper, the brand new GTS.
Ate it away.
His specific dead-on comparison was the fact that the Dodge Viper, in today's world, the 2018 Dodge Viper, for just at $85,000, fairly freaking cheap for everything you're getting, fastest production car in terms of a track-style car, not in terms of, like, the Demons or anything like that, but in terms of a race-ready track car that you buy off the showroom floor and you go and put it on the track. He was comparing that at 85 grand to the GT3 RS Porsche, which comes in at 275 grand. So for 200 less, literally $200,000 less, which most people won't make in 4 or 5 years' time, for that difference, he said, hands down, all out, that Viper would destroy it, every piece of it.
Right on.
Every piece.
The Porsches are a little bit impractical. I've learned that. They're great cars to look at. They're very popular. We own them. They're extremely, but I'm actually trading out of mine now, as you know, we discussed this morning, to move into something a little more practical.
Well, I think it's more of, I don't think it's, I wouldn't say, you know, impractical. What I would almost go with is, it's not like they have flaws or problems. What they have is perfection, right? Like, so the braking on them, no chance you're beating it. The handling on them, the weight distribution and balance, that was one of the things that Chris was mentioning, was that these cars are so well balanced. You can take them and push them to the fullest in every situation. And that doesn't mean if it's going through a 90 degree corner, whether it is a 0-60 run, a 60-0 stop, a full-on handling, just the power distribution, the way that they handle, the way that they respond, the way that the PDK transmissions respond. There's nothing out there that's going to give you a better bang for your buck in terms of an all-around balance. So braking, suspension, handling, luxury, looks, styling, all of it. You're getting all of everything for that great price.
One of the things Porsche is kind of upset about right now is so many people take these cars home and park them, like mine. I have right at 10,000 miles on mine. It's 2 years old. They don't get driven.
No.
And Porsche wants their cars out on the street where people can see them and enjoy them a little bit.
Yep.
It's a lot of fun. But thank you for that dissertation. Like you, yesterday I spent some time at home working in the morning, went out for a little bit, and in the afternoon went right back to work, was doing a lot of online research, especially as it pertains to our new show. Good morning to McKenzie out there from Code 504. A lot of good stuff coming up out of them. Spoke to Lindsay McKenzie last week about the BEM Code 504 SEMA truck. And good morning to Larry Williams. Larry, I'll be calling you after lunch today. I have a 1 o'clock interview with a gentleman, and you and I will talk after that. Larry Williams up there, he is the official upholstery facility there of BEM, and he's grinding it out up there, Bub, making it happen, man.
That's it.
A lot of great stuff, man.
Yep.
A lot of great stuff going on. Bub, we've gotten a lot of requests for people to take it back to the basics. Look at the ladies, man, right there. We've gotten a lot of requests taking it back to the basics. You're a perfectionist on everything you do. An oil change can take you 30 minutes to get it done properly, sometimes an hour. And let's talk about why that is such a precise thing and why going back to the basics is so very vitally important to the maintenance of a car.
Okay, so let's just start here, right? So oils slash lubricants. These things can run all day long. You can literally sit and research them and you can get opinions from every freaking person in the world, in the industry, on oil brand, on weights. And most people have no freaking idea what they're talking about. Let's just be real.
Yep.
Some guys know what they're talking about. 80% of them probably not.
I loved when people talked about synthetic oils coming out, how there was bearing skip. What are you talking about, you idiot?
Listen, that's what I'm saying. Let's just move on from those, right? So there are advantages to anything that you do in terms of performance upgrades, in terms of what the proper lubricants are. All of them can be related to something or another in life in some shape or form, whether it's like your body and what kind of fluids you put into it. Do you put alcohol in it? Do you put water in it, right? It's just like you can go as basic as that. One is going to give you some pros, one's going to give you some cons. So you start talking about oils, oil mixtures, oil weights, oil additives, what's good to put in your gas tank, what kind of crap you should be pouring in it. Man, it could literally go all day long about what to use, what to choose, how to do it. We specifically here at BEM have always run everything on Mobile One. Now, we try to lean towards fully synthetics on everything. Sometimes applications don't require that or even recommend not putting those in. But Mobile One is our go-to for all of our lubricants. And I'm talking everything from the engine all the way back through every piece of the drivetrain. So the engine, the transmission, and the axles, whether it's a front and rear, rear only, whatever it may be. Things that I do like to do, you know, I'm very brand specific, and I like things that companies that offer a full array of
product,
you know, something, right? So what I mean by that is I would love personally if Mobile One had windshield washer fluid. I would love if they had brake fluid, like, because then you could literally take and have everything under that platform on one brand, right? And you know I love to build that, like, very brand specific. Unfortunately, they don't, so you always have to kind of mix it up from there, and you have to find a good partner that works with it. Even though it's totally irrelevant, that's just personal preference. I just want to lean towards Mobile Ones. But the Mobile One is the product line that I choose to run, especially everything from modern performance all the way back to the vintage early model cars, unless I have to do something very, very, very specific. For, you know, some of those old three-speed transmissions, none with synchronizers, all kinds of crazy stuff you have to do.
Do you find, Bub, is there a difference between manufacturers and makes of motor oil?
In terms of what?
In terms of their quality. Is Mobile One a better quality? Is the synthetic better than non-synthetic? Is Mobile One better than Castrol? Do you find there are differences between the lubricants?
Yeah, you know, it's you know, that's something that, again, could just be a topic that you're going to get so many opinions on. It's going to go all day long, and you can get a lot of friction from it. You can get I'm not saying friction from oil-related friction. I'm saying friction from opinions, right? Mm-hmm. I think there are a lot of great tests out there that will show pros and cons to every oil company. And some companies do really, really strong. Some companies are really low, right? You are paying for a very high-end quality with somebody like Mobile One, but there are also great companies out there. I don't mind throwing it out there. There is Castrol. There is Valvoline. There are great companies out there that all have their very high-end line
as well.
So
why do you use Mobile One exclusively?
Mobile One exclusively is strictly because it's, you know, two things. One, the quality, I've never had an issue with it. Two, I feel like, you know, there are probably, I would say, 60, 65, almost lean towards 70% of all automotive manufacturers in today's world recommend using Mobile One. So I feel like if that is something that is good on a mass production level and it meets some very serious R&D and testing, that would be something pretty solid to back up and go behind. And that's why I've always leaned towards it. It's something that typically you get, you know, you get some high-performance SRT-based vehicles in here. You get some AMG-based vehicles in here. All of those kinds of vehicles recommend and require Mobile One-based products. So I've been able to not only get comfortable with that product line, but also see that that product line works in everything else that I'm doing. On-road, off-road, high-performance-based vehicles, stuff that's
air-cooled,
on the track,
air-cooled.
So I've been able to see that that works in all of them, even all the way down to your motorcycles, the Harley-Davidsons, the custom choppers, things running S&S motors, you know, anything like that. They do have a full product line for it, and that's what I love best.
And, Bub, one of the things I want to ask you about also is that what about the people that are saying you can run 15,000 or 20,000 miles on an oil change today when our standard thinking is 3,000 miles? Do you find that to be the case? The old crude oils, the non-synthetic oils, used to leave a lot of deposits on the underside. You could very easily pull a valve cover up and tell what the valve train was doing. The underside of the valve cover, there were a lot of deposits under it. It was almost like charcoal, man.
Yeah, again, I think it's, you know, I always do my stuff as close to 3,000 miles as I can. Naturally, that's just what I do. Some people, that might get a little hectic because some people drive a freaking lot, and stopping every 3 to 4 weeks to do an oil change can get annoying, right? Like, you've got to plan it in your schedule. It does take some time. It's not like it's too overpriced. Your average fully synthetic oil change anywhere between like $80 and $200, depending on the kind of car, and that's a big jump right there. But that is some cars. Some cars are 6 quarts and some cars are 12 quarts, right? So it's a big difference, and you can double that number very quickly. But how much are you saving, really, when you're doing that, right? You're saving the cost of, if you're having to run recommended or required Mobile One fully synthetic oil, you probably have a higher-end car. Yeah?
Corvette, Porsche.
It's probably not going to be something that's listed on the cap of maybe a base model Kia.
No, it's probably not.
I'm just throwing that out there.
But you can still use it in a Kia.
Yeah, for sure. You could definitely use it, and you could improve the life of that setup. But it's something where you're going to spend, you know, that kind of money for something that's going to save you maybe a $12,000, $20,000 motor.
How about these quick change places, Bub? Like a quick lube or something like that?
You know, it's just run-of-the-mill stuff. You're getting a oil pumped out of a drum, and that's just reality. I mean, it's a quick oil change, and that's why it's cheap. You know, it's cheap. You go in, you get basic oil, you get your oil change done. Now, it's not bad. You're still getting an oil change done. You're getting fresh oil in there, but does it have everything that you might want in it for your engine to last its longest and perform its peak? Does it have the right additives in it? Is it the right weight oil? Is it... You know, some of those companies are out there, they're close in weight, but maybe they don't have the exact one recommended for your car.
You're making
a very,
very
vehicle specific when it comes to that, and some of these guys don't necessarily take that line of care. But I'm specific in terms of weight for every application. This car is going to be 1550. The Porsche out front is going to be a 0W40. The Mercedes out front is going to be a 0W40. All of them have different options. This is the high performance application with zinc additive, so it works perfect. Hydraulic flat tappet camshafts, the older vintage stuff, or you have like your European car formula that does BMWs, Mercedes, Porsches, all of them that is meant for that high revving RPM.
Why is zinc additive necessary on a flat tappet cam, Bob?
So this is something where it takes a lot of time and research, and that's why I go out and I study, of course, everybody's product line. You go to Mobil 1's website, you can literally pull up every weight oil that they sell, and again, everything from street vehicles, on-road, off-road, to motorcycles, V-twin oils, which is 20W50 weight. You know, so there's fully synthetics there that work in both the engine, the crankcase, transmission, all of it, full covered, one bottle, not hard. You're not mixing stuff up, and you're not having to have 20 different types of things going on. But you can go out, you can research these things and see exactly what oil you're trying to run in your application and make sure that it's the exact same thing for it. They also offer a full line of filters that would match your setup as well, whether it's a traditional style filter or a cartridge style filter. You can put it right on and you've got a match system.
Mobil 1 now says that their filters are good for 15,000 miles, Bob.
That's right, man. It's you know, that's a question you asked me earlier, too, is the 15,000 thing. So, yes, there are oils that are extended performance, is what Mobil 1 considers them. Extended performance gets you up to that 15,000 mark. Is that something that I still do and push that limit on? No, it's not something that I do, but it can do it, and there's no problem with it. They are backing it. They are guaranteeing it.
Yes.
So it is something that you can do if you do a lot of driving. Maybe you do 10,000 miles a month somehow. Maybe you're driving that kind of that mileage that much. You don't want to just stop every 2 weeks and get an oil change. You can use the extended performance, you can use the extended mileage, and you can go for it.
And with today's machining tolerances and the perfection of them, used to be that you'd have to break a motor in for 500 miles, change the oil because there were contaminants floating throughout it. They did not have the micron capability that today's oil filters do, like you found in the new Mobil 1 filters, Bob,
yeah,
that take out so much of the crap and keep it from floating around the system. It really is very, very high tech, Bob. Doing an oil change, Bob, we've got some things here. First of all, let's identify what this is sitting right here behind.
Yeah, man. So, you know, just talking about basics, the oil change is your most basic thing you're going to do on your vehicle aside from setting freaking tire
pressures.
Also
the most overlooked.
Most overlooked with the tire pressures, right? How many people just get in their car and drive without checking oil?
Correct.
Or doing your tire pressures, right? So this here is the oil drain bucket. This is nothing more than a cylinder that you put your used oil into. It does lift. Every time he does it, he typically makes a mess all over the floor. So that is why he is not doing it underneath of the engine oil pan of this car right now. That's where he wanted to film. We did not film there because it would be splashing everywhere. So I saved us on that mess.
Short of this, if you're doing it at home, what could you use in its place, Bob?
Yeah, so I mean, smaller than that, if you're doing it at your house, you're a do-it-yourselfer, you want to just lay on the ground, you want to jack your car up, drive onto a set of ramps, whatever it is you're doing.
Set your emergency brake, wheel chalk the vehicle.
Yep. If you are going underneath of it, you can buy specific plastic drain pans that actually can even be sealed that have a plug in the center of them. So once you are done draining your oil, you can actually take those and go dispose of them in the proper place, not just pour them out in your backyard in an old pile of trees that are in the back left corner.
Don't do
that. Not really what you're supposed to do. But you can take them to any parts store. It is not a cost to literally walk it to the back and just pour the old
oil
into
it. We'll recycle it here if somebody needs
it. It's just that simple.
Yeah, exactly. Good morning to our good friend Jack out there in Ontario, Canada. Jack, we're talking about the basics today. We're going back. We had about 10, 12, 15 questions this weekend alone in our Sales at Bubba's Exotic Motorsports inbox asking about oil changes and how overlooked they can be. So we decided to hit that topic today. Thank you for joining us, Jack. So, Bub, the first thing you do is you get the vehicle properly positioned, whether it's on in the driveway or whether it's on a four-post lift, what we have here. Four-post meaning there are four arms that come out.
So this would be two posts.
One, two, four posts. Well, you can
drive on four posts.
Drive on four posts. There you go. So, ladies and gentlemen, the first thing Bub does is safely secures his vehicle. He keeps the vehicle in neutral. Bub, do you drain the oil at an operating temperature or when it's cold?
You know, that's a really good question. So if I, of course, you can't control the environment. You can't necessarily control every situation. Typically, if it is hot, I drain it hot. I prefer it hot because it does flow all the way out from the top of the motor all the way down. You're getting out as much as you possibly can. When you are working with something a little bit colder, climates are a little bit colder, make sure one of the key things, too, I'll lead here in a second, when you are doing it colder, the oil is much thicker, right? So it takes a lot longer for it to come out. Sometimes you won't get it all out. Some people are very impatient. He will put it back in while it's still like flowing out.
I'll just take the old oil and put it back in.
I know. So you just actually catch it with a bucket and then just put it back up top,
exactly
like almost like a rotational
flush. Just keep recycling, yeah.
So You know, when it's cold, if I do a cold oil change, I'm not going to start the motor, make it hot, because it's just more of a risk of burning your hands, right? It's
correct.
Just that freaking simple, right?
That's
so
correct.
You want it hot, but you don't want to burn your hands. It's, so it's kind of like, what do you do? Well, when it's cold, what I do is I make sure two things happen. I make sure that I pull that plug and I just let it drain and
drain.
I go do something for a couple hours. Literally, I'll go
you
and do.
Do
something for a couple hours.
Just did that on one of the Harleys.
Yeah.
Same thing.
I'll go do something else. I'll go in the paint and body shop. I'll go in the upholstery shop. I'll finish fabbing something. I'll just do something while that is draining so I can get every drop out that I possibly can so you're not just throwing in good oil and some bad. So I'll let it sit. But if it is hot, you're naturally going to get all of that oil out because it's going to flow very, very smooth and it's all pretty much going to come out within a couple minutes, right? So it doesn't take too long to do a hot oil change, kind of the way it is. When you have a client pull up and wait, it is a hot oil change because the vehicle was just driven, so it's typically fairly in and out quick.
So, Bob, one of the things I was looking at is some – I laugh at some of the YouTube videos that we put out there. I was watching a spark plug change yesterday, and the guy said, now you take out your old spark plug, this is how you do it, and then you put a little thread seize on it, and he's banging the camera around. It's a handheld camera, and you can't hear the audio well. You can hear the clunking of the camera, and he says, and you put your new spark plug in, and he takes the spark plug, and he drops it down into the top of the cylinder. Two things there, ladies and gentlemen. One, never, ever, ever drop a spark plug down. Why, Bub?
Listen, if you're working with something that has to be gapped, right? Like if
yes.
you're not working with like
yes.
a, maybe a Boss
yes.
Platinum 4 or a E3 series
yes.
plug, something that is a gapless plug that has many straps on it, many strap design, you are working with something that is gapped. You have to set a specific gap, and that will either make or break the way this car
yes.
runs, and you could literally destroy an engine by improperly gapped plugs, as cheap and easy as they sound. And by the way, people are going all hee-haw about the fact that spark plugs used to be 95 cents, and now they are upwards of $14.95 for some really good ones. Listen, guys, if you're having to put $15 plugs in there, it's probably what I mentioned earlier, a higher-end
that's
car.
Correct.
You want to just spend the money and get
just
the right stuff.
The other thing he didn't do, Bub, he said, he just, and I watched it very carefully, so detail is everything to us. He said, here you take out the old spark plug, put some thread sealer on it, and put the new spark plug in. What did he miss?
Wait, so what happened there? So is it a gasket seat or what?
How about he didn't even show the people how to gap the plug?
Oh, yeah, the most important part, right? Well, it probably wasn't gapped after he dropped it in
yeah,
there
Yeah, dropped
anyways.
It in the cylinder head anyway.
So that is what can happen, and trust me, that is something that you may learn from experience, or if you're watching, you will learn it from just pure advice right now. If you do drop in a plug that has to be gapped, literally if you drop it into the cylinder, if it has to go down, maybe internally the plug sits in the center of the head versus on the bottom side, maybe you're working on a small block style motor, a little bit easier, you can kind of reach down yep. and just screw it in. But if you are reaching down into a 6-8 inch drop, don't drop the plug. It is going to literally hit on that center strap and it will literally change that gap. Now, whether it's 10 thousandths or it may close it all the way down,
it doesn't matter.
You could put a set of plugs in your car and start it up and it runs worse. Well, that's probably the reason why.
The tighter the gap, what happens, Bub?
The hotter it's going to burn.
The hotter that cylinder runs, ladies and gentlemen. The cold, the more open the gap, the colder it runs. So, Bob, the reason I mention that is when you do your oil change and you pull the plug out of the bottom, get up, go to the top of the car, and pull the valve cover.
The
oil filler cap off the top of the valve cover and pull the dipstick up. Why? You're allowing air into that system so that the oil can drain out more freely. It is a closed system. So don't forget to pull up the oil filler cap and the dipstick, ladies and gentlemen. Bub, what we have here is not only our drain plug, our drain pan, Bub, but once you drain all of the oil out, the second step you take is you remove the oil filter. And we need to be careful of the oil filter, Bub. Why?
Why?
Because it's still full, correct?
Yeah, well, yes, of course.
So we got to be careful of it. So be careful, ladies and gentlemen, when you take the filter off, you don't just turn it upside down. Put it into an approved oil recycling type receptacle, and you'll be okay, Bub. So now let's go through, Bub. Now we're going to take the drain plug, and we're going to put Teflon tape on the drain plug.
You're not putting Teflon tape on the drain plug.
But
that's
wait, everybody
put
puts Teflon no. tape on their oil drain
Here,
plug.
Here, you see the Teflon tape? I took it and put it away because you do not use Teflon
do
tape.
Do not
on
use
an oil
Teflon
drain
tape.
Plug.
on an oil pan.
Don't even want to show it because somebody's going to clip through this thing really fast. Be like, oh, I knew they were Teflon taping it.
That's correct. And that's what everybody online does. Bub, we don't put those things in the oil. Why?
So that's something that your oil drain plug typically is going to seal from a banjo washer or a washer, a sealant style washer that sits right at the head of that bolt. If it's not an O-ring style seal, a lot of today's cars are O-ring style seals, so you have to do nothing more than even in today's world, you go into the dealership, they will literally replace the bolt and that O-ring all when they do the oil change. Typically, if you're going to like something mass production in terms of Mopar, Ford, GM, they will do it right out of the gate properly.
Yes. Larry Williams says Teflon tape. Larry, you wouldn't believe my family. Larry Williams is the official upholstery facility of the Bubba's Exotic Motorsports family. And Larry, you wouldn't believe how many people do use Teflon tape. Go out and YouTube
it. Not only on oil lines, it's like this huge misconception about the way things seal, and people don't have a true understanding for it. If you have a gasket or an O-ring or a banjo washer or flared fittings, there is no need for Teflon tape or thread sealant.
Yes.
Those kinds of things don't seal through the thread, guys. That is what holds it in. They seal literally through their sealing surface, which is either the gasket, the washer, the O-ring.
Yes.
If it is a brake line or a fuel line and it is flared, it is sealing through that flare, not through the thread of the line.
Jack would like to know, up in Ontario, Canada, Bub, is it okay to put anti-seize on spark plug threads?
Yes. So that's something that's always been...
And that's a good question.
That's actually a really good question because it's that's something where, man, it's almost 50-50 in the industry. Some guys do it, some guys
especially
don't.
Especially in the colder.
Definitely, I was going to say colder, more moisture environment style locations. You know, somewhere where you're dealing with, he's in Canada, so probably going to be a lot of snow up there, a lot of salt in the air. You know, once you start, I don't know if they use salt up there on the streets.
Bromide, stuff like that.
Whatever
the streets,
it is. Anyways, yes, very good idea, especially in today's motors where you are using modern style plugs, very high end plugs, into aluminum style cylinder heads.
There
those can get cross threaded very fast. That happens a lot with you love it. Go ahead and say it.
I do it Harleys. I do it on Triton motors.
There it is. There's the freaking Triton. I knew he was going to say Triton. So that was a huge thing that Ford had a problem with in their cylinder heads was plugs snapping off in the head because of that same problem. NECs, thread seize, any thread seize will literally prevent that from happening, whether it's changing your plugs every 6 months if you're doing like a high performance application or all the way down to every 10 years. It is going to help because it's not going to go anywhere.
Right.
It will always be there, but it's always great to use some sort of lubricant on your spark plugs. Just don't get it all over the end of the freaking
plug.
Exactly.
You don't want to. Yep. Exactly. Like
Oops.
I do.
Yeah.
Bub, one of the things I want to share with people is, even though it says 1550 in oils, and you can explain it more technically, you're very well versed with lubricants and their formulations.
Yeah.
This 50, this number can go a couple points one way or the other.
Yeah.
The one reason you stick with Mobile is the consistency is always, always, always there. So remember, this could theoretically, if it's a different brand, be 1545.
Yeah.
Correct?
It can, but not in Mobile's oil. They don't offer it.
That's correct. That's right. Jack says, yes, salt roads turn white. That's exactly right. And the same thing happens as that moisture and that stuff gets kicked up off the roads and into the motor as well, Jack. Good
question. And even more so importantly than not just, especially, Jack, where you are up north, where you are dealing with salt-based components that they put on the ground, things not just in spark plugs, but everything, bro. Like, you want to make sure that, I mean, if you are even working on, if you are doing it yourself, which you are, any suspension bolts, man, anything that you are working with nut and bolt related, you want to use some sort of
anti-seize,
any sort of lubricant that you can put on the threads just to protect it, man, because it is going to rust like that. Down here in South Florida, we do have that same problem. We are literally 7/10 of a mile from the water, from the ocean. So let me tell you, if I grind a piece of steel here in the shop, if I grind a piece of raw steel, totally different than up north, maybe 30, 45 minutes later, it literally is already getting surface rust on it. It's crazy how fast it can happen. And months from now, you just change a lower control arm. Maybe you did a lift kit. Maybe you're doing a code 504 conversion on a truck and you want to do, you know, some new nuts and bolts. You want to make a simple adjustment. You have rust already built up on there. It's going to make it that much harder just for you to do a very simple adjustment when it could be, if it's lubricated properly, loosen the adjustment bolts and turn away.
And there it is.
Yep.
Bub, what do I have here in my hand? Let's talk a little bit about what we have here. I'll show this to the audience as you describe it here.
Yeah, so those are actually oil filter pliers. These are something industry again will either A, not pre-lube the oil filter O-ring where it seals against its mating surface, or they will put on an oil and then you just go a half turn more with your wrist, nothing crazy, don't use pliers to put it on, you don't want to crush the filter in, but you will probably need to use a heavy
teeth on it right here.
Yep.
And this will grab the oil filter.
Yep.
You want itself. A lot of people over tighten oil filters, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. To get a tight grip on these oil filters, and you got to crank down on them as hard as you possibly can. Not good to do, because on the back side you can't get it off.
Yep.
People use screwdrivers and hammers, Bob,
yeah,
to get
I know.
Them off.
I know.
It's not good. Well,
things, they just tighten their oil drain pan bolts all the way down as far as they can. All of those things are typically something fairly soft, man. Typically between like 35. Overboard anal about doing torque wrenches on every last little piece. You can pretty much tighten down, snug it with your wrist.
Snug and be done.
And that's about it. That's all you need to do. Don't put it in so loose. Torque wrench, you don't have to go overboard, you are just snugging the things.
Now, Bob, I see here you're using Mobil 1 oil, but an AC Delco filter. AC Delco is what product?
So this is from General Motors. This is what you would naturally get if you were buying a GM
application.
Yeah, and again, that goes back to this being a more of a numbers matching setup, all original design. This is going to be a filter that is recommended and required to be on this motor that's in this vehicle, so it will fit exactly as it should. There are guys that are that pure. They want to know that their filter is even the correct filter.
And Bob, one of the things you often do is you'll sign across the top of here or put a date on it so that it is authenticated and you'll know if somebody's messed with it. There's also a place right here to put that, and you also put a BEM sticker in by the revolutions of the motor to tell you when the oil is due to change.
Yep.
This you stay by the old tried and true method.
Yep.
As we can see, Bob, there are several holes on the underside of this. This is where the oil enters and exits the filter. A nice black ring. What is this black ring that we have going around here?
So that, again, that's just like that drain plug bolt on the oil pan. That is the O-ring style seal. That is what prevents that filter.
You pre-prime your oil filters before installing them?
I do not, no.
You do not?
No.
So is there any advantage to pre-priming? And by priming, we mean putting a little bit of oil inside the filter for a startup.
Not really. I mean, it's you're going to start the motor up. It's going to generate oil pressure just like that.
Okay.
And you want to make sure that that's part of that fill-up process. Make sure that you have enough in there on your dipstick. Key feature there is make sure it's in that full mark when you first start it. But then again, check it after it runs for a few minutes, gets hot, circulates through the motor. Up top and filter. Through the oil filter, shut it down, let it cool off for a few minutes, let all of that oil settle down and drain to where it should be, then go back and check your oil again, add more if needed.
Bob, another, let's assume that everything's put back together. The oil filter's on, that the oil pan gasket is on, the oil pan bolt is in and nice and tight, and the car starts up and you've got a pool of oil underneath the car. What are some of the things, or what is probably one of the more lead causes of something like that having happened?
Yeah, so typically when that happens, it's because somebody, when they removed this, or yourself, if you're doing it yourself, if you took the old oil filter off and you did not check to see if this O-ring was there, sometimes you get what's considered a double gasket, which is when block or the oil mounting flange, wherever this filter may be. That gasket will stay in that location, so essentially you'll have put two gaskets together by screwing on your new oil filter, and it will literally just allow all the oil to flow out at full pressure, whatever that engine may be creating for pressure.
So ladies, gasket, that would be this one here that you see by my finger, only one gasket, not a second one. In fact, check your old oil filter that you've removed and make sure that this black rubber O-ring that Bub is describing has been attached to that oil filter. Otherwise, you're going to double gasket and have a mess on the floor. And trust oil filter wrench right here and put it on there just like this and tighten it as tight as I can go?
No, so once you spin that on, again, pre-lube that top O-ring so it does spin freely and doesn't bind and rip and tear that gasket. You want to just spin it all the way onto its surface and then half turn from there. Nothing more than turn. You can't just turn it backwards easily.
Exactly.
Again, not cranking it down. You're not going way overboard with the thing, but you do want to make sure that it's tight enough. It's not going to leak.
Okay, Bob, let me go back over here. My phone's been blowing up today while we're trying to, I'm making sure that we're talking to people as we move.
Well, we're all done anyway. So that is it for the oil change basics. That is probably a little too more in depth than you guys really needed. I feel like we gave you a little. Read it off your oil cap, or if you don't have a specific recommendation, go to Mobil 1's website or whatever your manufacturer of preference is. Mobil 1 is ours at BEM. Go out to that site, look it up, see what application. Extended performance, see what it is you need from their line, and you can get it pretty much anywhere in the U.S.
And finally, Bub, I want to ask about the final two products here. You have clean shop towels and you have brake cleaner. Why do you have brake cleaner when you're doing an oil change? This is a chlorinated brake cleaner, which means it immediately evaporates, Bub.
So this is for nothing more than just cleaning up when you are done. That is to clean up around your oil filter mating surface. After you tighten that new bolt back down or tighten the filter down, some old oil will still squeeze out of the side, and you don't want that to just run down either your filter.
You spray this, like you say, on a rag, and you wipe off all of the surfaces. That also gives you an indication if you ever have a leak where this leak may be coming from.
Yep.
So it kind of just pays to buy. So it's a little bit cheaper because it's a more industrial. But buy yourself a quick can over at Advance Auto Parts or wherever that is, ladies and gentlemen. Questions as well as those very definitive, how do you set valves or how do you build a high RPM race motor, Bub? We're here for all of those questions, ladies and gentlemen. Motorsports.com, and we will definitely answer them.
Yep.
On Friday's show, Bub, any idea about what we're going to be working with?
No, not yet.
Sounds like a good day then. Finishing up the GTX 1 this week as well, Bub. You're finishing up a VW R32 this week, Bub. A lot of paint and body work going on with you.
A lot of it, man. Yeah.
And we're going to be finishing up a couple of these other projects as well, Bub.
Yep.
One step at a time.
Yep.
Right?
So you guys stay tuned.
All any of your questions, ladies and gentlemen, we'd be honored to answer them. Sales at Bubba's Exotic. This episode has been brought to you by Bubba's Exotic Motorsports, ladies and gentlemen. And I hope even though we dumbed it down to the very basics, you learned a little bit more or found out something new. Jack says, great info, everybody. Awesome tips. Thanks. No, Jack, thank you. That gives me goosebumps to know that we can touch people's lives in a very positive manner today. And I'm glad maybe some of these tech tips helped you, Jack. And I appreciate you being part of the Bubba's Exotic Motorsports family as well. Miss Outlaw Boutique, that's MS Outlaw Boutique. It's now all online, ladies and gentlemen. Finest in boutique fashion, accessories, and apparel. Robin and Layla have got it all going on over there. Miss Outlaw Boutique. Podcast One, ladies and gentlemen, podcast1.com. Our new show is out there, and it is killing it in the ratings. We're very, very proud to be part of that, Bub. I'm very, very excited about it. Those guys have been. And they make it really, really fun. Going to have a good week this week, ladies and gentlemen. Sales at Bubba's Exotic Motorsports.com. We'll field all of your questions. Touch somebody's life in a super positive manner today, ladies and gentlemen. Let's open the door for somebody who's got their hands full. Let's put a pair of shoes on somebody's feet that Diesel hasn't eaten and put holes in himself. Look at him looking at me right there. Let's put a pair of shoes on somebody's feet that isn't so fortunate to have a pair of shoes, ladies and gentlemen. Or let's feed somebody for that cup of designer coffee you're drinking, ladies and gentlemen. You can get a power bar and a muscle milk for somebody. Let's make sure we reach out and take